This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Brian Naylor in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. The Vatican is reportedly about to ban homosexuals from the Catholic priesthood. The Vatican is expected to release a document within weeks that would impose stricter rules and screening in an effort to keep gay men from entering seminaries. The measure is not all that new. Back in the 1960s, new rules blocked homosexual candidates from entering seminaries, but enforcement on the ground since then has been varied. More importantly, prior discussions of homosexuality in the Catholic Church have struggled with the definition of what it means to be homosexual. The new document definitively blocks all homosexuals, even celibate ones, from the clergy. At a time when the Catholic Church is still reeling from the clergy sex scandal, many are wondering whether banning gay priests will further alienate and divide members of the Church in America. Others support a return to traditional doctrine in this matter and believe that Pope Benedict XVI is steering the Church back on path. If you have a role in the Church, we'd like to hear from you. Priests, seminarians, prospective seminarians, do you support a ban on gay priests, or do you find such a move troubling? Our number in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org, totn@npr.org. Joining us now is John Allen. He is the Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter, and he joins us by phone from his room at the Courtyard Marriott in New Haven. Welcome, John.
Hi, Brent.
What can you tell us about this document that is expected to be released in the next couple of weeks?
Well, I suppose the first important point is that we haven't seen it yet. And so to some extent, we're having a conversation about a document that no one has read. And as is always the case with church documents, especially one that have a sort of legislative dimension, the devil is in the details. And so exactly how this document is going to characterize, for example, what homosexual means for purpose of this policy, that is, whether it's going to describe it in terms like a permanent enduring orientation or not, that will tell us a good deal about how sweeping it will be. The other bit of context I suppose we should make is one that you noted in your introduction, which is that there is a sense in which this does not in any way mark a change in policy. The Vatican issued a document officially saying that homosexuals should not be ordained in 1961 and that it reaffirmed that policy as recently as May 2002. So I think the open question here is whether or not there will be a program of enforcement and vigilance and so forth that will make this the experience of this on the ground any different than those two previous documents.
Mm-hmm. You have seen, I understand, an earlier version of this document. I'd like to ask you how this changed over time and maybe even back up a step beyond that and say, how did this all get started?
Well, work on this document actually began in 1994, so that's well before the most recent episodes in the sex abuse crisis in the States. And as often the case with Vatican documents, this actually started with a request from a group of American bishops who came to Rome and said to Vatican officials that it would be helpful, in their view, to have the Vatican say something on this. This, of course, because they perceived that there was at that time a disproportionate representation of homosexuals in Catholic seminaries. And then there was a lengthy sort of back-and-forth process of work on the document. At some stages, it seemed to have been put in the back burner. At other points, it was brought forward. And again, this is often the trajectory of a document, particularly one that treats a controversial topic like this one. Many documents never see the light of day. And then, of course, when the sex abuse crisis hit with full force in 2001 and 2002, I think many drew the conclusion from that or looked at that and said that that there was a need for a kind of systemic review of how we are handling sexual formation, sexual screening, and so forth of candidates for seminaries. And in that context, the energy behind this document was sort of restarted. And it was in fact prepared and ready to go in the final months of John Paul II's pontificate, but of course, given his health, he was not capable of making decisions like this, and so it essentially awaited his successor. And the word we have now is that Benedict XVI has given his approval to the document and that we expect it sometime this fall.
And is there anything we can infer about Benedict XVI? Is he trying to set a moral tone or perhaps make a mark on Vatican doctrine by issuing this decree fairly early in his tenure?
Well, again, I say that this was on his desk when he got there. So he did not begin work on this document. It was not his decision to have it. But on the other hand, he clearly could set it aside if he wanted to, and would appear that he has not made that decision. And in terms of what it illustrates about the man, I don't think we have to guess. This is a pope who, the day before his election, in that fateful homily at the Mass that opened the conclave, defined the central challenge facing the Catholic Church as he sees it in terms of a dictatorship of relativism, this idea that in the West there's this climate of thought in which you've got your truths and I've got mine and they're all kind of equally valid. It's very clear that he intends to reassert objective truth as he sees it in line with the moral teaching of the Catholic Church and its doctrines. And in the culture, obviously, one of the places where this question of objective truth becomes especially explosive is on questions of sexual morality, what in the West we broadly call the culture wars, issues like homosexuality, abortion, stem cell research, and so on. And so there, I think it's quite clear that Benedict is letting us know that he is not going to be a pope who is going to shrink from those debates.
Let's go to a call now. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. And Father Edger joins us from Eastern Washington. Thanks for calling the program.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
What are your thoughts on this document that we expect to see from the Vatican in the coming weeks or months?
I'm trying to remember, was it Casablanca where they decided to round up the usual suspects? Mm-hmm. It seems every time there's a trouble, you know, or a problem, there's a desire to find a group of people who can be blamed for it. And I'm very much against targeting one group of people rather than targeting a group of people, say, who are not psychosexually mature. You know, the leader, the requirements of priesthood are difficult, and it takes a level of maturity regardless of your sexual orientation. And I think it's the level of maturity that needs to be looked at.
And what do you expect the impact would be on those already in the priesthood?
I think it's going to be more demoralizing because I think, you know, people who are already in the priesthood, have a hope for the priesthood, have a hope that young men are going to come in. And generally, I know in our own diocese, I've been fairly well impressed by the level of seminarians we have been getting. You know, and I'm not at all interested in their orientation.
Mm-hmm. And do you think it's likely to result in any many resignations or perhaps people deciding not to enter the priesthood, men?
I would say to a young seminarian thinking about, you know, the priesthood and thinking about coming in, if you are going to be turned down because of your sexual orientation, your diocesan director or the vocation director for the order is doing you a big favor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you are not going to be accepted for who you are, don't go there. You know, you can find other dioceses. You can find other orders.
Thank you very much for calling, Father Edger.
You're very welcome.
And I'd like to ask now to join the conversation Father Jerry Pokorsky, who is a pastor at the Diocese of Lincoln, Nebraska. And he joins us from the station WUCV in Lincoln, Nebraska. Father Pokorsky, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much.
Excuse me.
Thank you very much.
I understand that you support this measure that would banning homosexuals from the priesthood. Why is that?
Well, I think anything that brings doctrinal clarity to a situation and an application, I think, is healthy for the church.
And are you concerned at all that this would lead to a priest's inability or would hurt his ability to minister to his congregation?
Do you think I don't quite understand the question. Do you mean
would
if go ahead.
I'm sorry. Is there something inherent in homosexuality that hurts a priest's ability to minister?
It's not a question of the ability to minister in the strict sense, because a good deal of what priests do are from the pulpit in the confessional and all. But yes, if first of all, I must define what gay means, and by gay I don't mean somebody with homosexual orientation. I mean someone who has a homosexual orientation and does not see it as a disorder and then acts accordingly, either in speech or deeds. And I wouldn't trust somebody like that in the confessional. Why? Because they would be giving bad doctrine in the confessional. And that's what I mean by gay. Beyond that, homosexual or same-sex attraction must be treated, I believe, something in a similar way that you'd treat somebody who has an alcoholic problem. You wouldn't put him in a situation as a corner bar for an alcoholic, for example, that would lead him to commit the sins that he's inclined towards committing.
We heard from a caller just a few moments ago, a priest in Eastern Washington, who said this amounts to rounding up the usual suspects. Are you at all worried that this would amount to essentially a witch hunt in the church?
Well, first of all, witches weren't real, and at least not in the pervasive sense. But if you look at the reports that have come out, a good deal of the sexual abuse that took place were gay sex. My understanding is that 78% of the documented cases were gay exploitation of boys who were post-pubescent after the age of adolescence or in adolescence. And that means, statutory definitions aside, that means that it's gay sex. And that's a difficulty. But beyond that, there's a wider culture of dissidents and oppressive behavior and oppressive attitudes towards seminarians who are who profess orthodoxy in Catholic seminaries nowadays. That's the bigger problem. Round up the usual suspects, yes. Round up the suspects who are professing heterodoxy within our seminaries.
We're going to take a short break right now, and then we'll continue our conversation on the Catholic Church and its policy on gay priests. I'm Brian Naylor. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Brian Naylor in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. We're talking about gay priests and the Catholic Church. In the coming months, a formal announcement is expected from the Vatican that would ban all gay men from joining the clergy, even if they're celibate. And our guest is Father Jerry Pokorsky, a pastor at the Diocese of Lincoln, Nebraska. And we do want to hear from our listeners. If you're a member of the Catholic Church, how do you feel about a ban on gay priests? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org, totn@npr.org. Father Pokorsky, I wanted to go back to something you said earlier about relating to the sexual abuse scandal in the Catholic Church. There seems to be a rather large difference in between many of the allegations and many of the cases of sexual abuse were essentially pedophilia. Which is something quite different from homosexuality.
Yes, it is. Pedophilia means my layman's psychological approach to it or understanding of it is prepubescent sex with children. Now, the vast majority, however, the statutory regulations, laws would have a sex abuse with children with age 16 and below. That's my general understanding. And the John Jay Report, which is a study commissioned by the U.S. bishops, revealed that of all the cases of so-called pedophilia reported and investigated, that something like, if I could be off by a percentage point or two, but 78% were basically male-on-male sex involving post-pubescent children, that is, young men. by any, there might be all sorts of clinical terms for that, but that is called gay sex and gay exploitation. And that's what needs to be emphasized, I believe, to understand the problem as taken as a whole.
Let's take a couple of calls here. Jeff in Kansas City, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Yes, I was kind of curious. It seemed like before that the Catholic Church had always stated that homosexuality was a choice, and that was what made it a sin. And I'm kind of wondering if this is basically saying that, you know, even if they remain celibate, which by the Church's definition would mean they aren't homosexual, because they're not committing homosexual acts, if they're now saying that homosexuality is inborn and it's just, you know, something you're either born homosexual or heterosexual.
John Allen, let me turn that question to you. How is the Catholic Church defining homosexuality?
Well, I think the truth is that there is no sort of clear, accepted, detailed standard for what we mean by that. I mean, you know, at one poll, in the context of someone's eligibility to be admitted to the priesthood, at least, I mean, at one poll you might say that, you know, it would mean somebody who has affiliated himself with a quote-unquote gay lifestyle, whatever that means, but, you know, actively participating in sort of gay pride rallies and so forth. You know, another end of the poll, it might be somebody who's had, you know, one fleeting same-sex thought at one stage of his life. Where you draw the line in between, I think, is tremendously unclear, and that, I think, accounts to some extent for some of the variability in practice over the years, particularly since that explicit 61 policy was put into place. The plain truth is that some seminaries, some bishops, some religious orders have been more rigid and others more flexible in deciding, you know, what level of experimentation and doubt in someone's life they're comfortable with.
Jeff, thanks for your call.
All right, thank you.
All right. And let's turn now to Jason in Kansas City. You're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi. I just think that this kind of, ban on allowing homosexual men into the priesthood would be a great tragedy to the priesthood. Surely there are already priests who are homosexual who are celibate, so it's a non-issue. And wouldn't this contradict the catechism's definition that, you know, homosexuals must be accepted with respect, compassion, and sensitivity?
Father Pokorsky, your thoughts.
Well, that's certainly true that that you ought to accept people and treat them with respect, that is. It doesn't mean that we need to push aside the mission of the Church, which is the salvation of souls. My concern, my primary concern, is the integrity of the confessional in all of this, integrity of preaching and the confessional. If I can't trust a priest in the confessional, then I can't trust him. And if he's behaving in a way that if he accepts the gay lifestyle as an appropriate and natural and normal good thing, I can't trust him in the confessional. So now this gets to the broader question of heterodoxy, general heterodoxy, and the acceptance of dissent in our seminaries across the board, all across the nation, and that's probably the bigger question.
Well, let me just follow on that and ask if can a priest accept the what you label the gay lifestyle without practicing it? Does that still make him suspect?
The same-sex attraction must be understood as a condition that is intrinsically disordered. That is similar to, I compare it to alcoholism. It is an inclination. It certainly is the result of original sin or behavior or bringing up, whatever the source may be. It is an inclination that is intrinsically disordered, and that being the case, we must practice as Catholics, as human beings, avoiding what we call the near occasions of sin. And by placing somebody who has homosexual attraction within an all-male club like the priesthood, we are exposing them unjustly, I believe, to near occasions of sin that can lead to their eternal damnation, as well as them themselves leading others to eternal damnation if they end up in homosexual encounters and do not repent. It's a question of salvation, you see.
Jason, go ahead.
If I could disagree on that point, we're not inviting them into an all-male exclusive club. We're inviting them into a seminary where they learn, you know, the teachings of the faith and how to minister those teachings of the faith. We're not inviting them into a brothel or into a corner bar, as you try to compare it to.
Have you been in a seminary?
No.
Do you know what a seminary is like?
I have not.
Well, let me ask you, Father Jerry, you were in seminary. How prevalent was homosexuality?
If you would ask me to give a this had to do with one seminar that I was involved in. If you'd ask me to give a criminal report where I could rely from the point of view of rules of evidence, I could say that I couldn't prove. But being a male and understanding about the nuances of the homosexual and gay lifestyle, I would suspect that it was pretty prevalent.
Mm-hmm. And so, do you think that going back to our original discussion, one thing we didn't talk too much about is that all 200 or so seminaries in the United States are going to be visited and inspected, I guess, for all intents and purposes. Curricula will be inspected. Are they going to be successful in their efforts to block gay men from joining seminaries?
I think it's a step in the right direction, although from the point of view of success, we have to think in terms of church terms, which is generations and decades rather than tomorrow. And it's a step in the right direction. It's not going to be a cure-all. It's not going to be a silver bullet to solve all the problems. But it's this kind of conversation is good because people who are gay or gay activists will be less inclined to enter the seminary, and that's a step in the right direction, and that is a sign that maybe this document will have some positive effect.
Father Jerry Pokorsky is pastor at the Diocese of Lincoln in Nebraska, and he joined us from the studios of WUCV in Lincoln. Thanks very much, Father Pokorsky.
Well, thank you very much.
John Allen, I want to ask you about, are you still with us, John?
Yes.
I'm just wondering if what your thoughts are. What is the thought in the Vatican is in terms of how widespread or deeply rooted a problem this is in American seminaries?
It's something that is legendarily difficult to get any hard data on. I mean, the reality is that the American bishops have never commissioned specific studies of this question, in part because it's, most sociologists would say, it's very difficult to know because, of course, respondents to any studies you would do would have powerful incentives not necessarily to respond honestly. And therefore, I think that the best answer is that neither the American bishops nor the Vatican nor anyone else can speak with confidence about precisely what the percentage of homosexuals is in American seminaries or among priests in the United States. On the other hand, anecdotally, I think most people would agree that whatever that percentage is, it is larger than the percentage of homosexuals in the general population. And this is not just my theory. You'll recall that then-Bishop, now Archbishop Wilton Gregory, when he was still president of the U.S. Bishops' Conference, in Rome at a press conference in April 2002 during that summit between American cardinals and bishops and the Pope, said this out loud, that there is a disproportionate representation of homosexuals in the seminaries. And so I think everyone agrees that that is so. Exactly what the level is, I don't think anyone knows.
Does the Church risk losing some membership in the United States because of this action?
Well, clearly this is going to be one of those documents, one of those interventions from the Vatican that is deeply controversial. And no doubt there will be some gay or gay-friendly Catholics, that is, Catholics who may not be gay themselves but perhaps have children who are or know people who are or who are simply very concerned with this issue, who have been sort of hanging on by a thread, for whom this will be the straw that broke the camel's back that prompts them to walk out. But my sense is that the way things tend to work in the church is that people tend to be very resistant about leaving, and most people sort of make find a modus vivendi. And I think the other point worth making here is that although this is going to be a very high-profile event from the point of view of media relations and so on, it is still unclear exactly what kind of impact over the long term it's going to have on the ground, given that this is already the policy we've been living with. And given the fact that, quite honestly, when the Vatican makes sweeping edicts of this sort, like, no gays in the priesthood, the Vatican officials themselves understand that on the ground, in individual circumstances, exceptions will be made. So I think it is an open question exactly to what extent this is really going to change the nature of the American priesthood over the long haul.
We're speaking with John Allen, the Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter, who is joining us from New Haven, Connecticut. And we're talking about the issue of gay priests. And I'd like to ask Richard Seip to join us now. Richard Seip is a former priest and co-author of the forthcoming book, Sex, Priests, and Secret Codes, the Catholic Church's 2,000-year paper trail of sexual abuse. He studied issues of the church, orientation, celibacy, and sex abuse for many years and joins us from the studios of KPBS in San Diego. Welcome.
I'm happy to be here.
Let me ask you first, Mr. Seip, is this a new issue, a new problem, if it's a problem, that is homosexuality in seminaries and the clergy?
Homosexuality is not a new problem. There have always been a larger proportion of homosexual men in the clergy than in the general population. One thing that is new, both in terms of science and psychology and spirituality, is the definition of orientation. Everything was determined previously, both by science and by morals, in terms of act. And now we have this other, more subtle distinction about orientation. There have been homosexual bishops, popes, saints in the past, and there are now. This study and this edict, whatever it is, and the study of seminaries starts in exactly the wrong spot. It starts with those people who are not in the priesthood. We have to look at the sexual activity, whether it's heterosexual or homosexual, in an institution that professes itself to be celibate. That is the great unreality and the great unsolved problem. We know from many studies that between 45 and 50% of priests are sexually active at any one time. A certain proportion of those are homosexually active. A certain proportion are heterosexually active.
Mr. Seip, I just need to pause for a moment to let our listeners and our stations know that you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I didn't mean to interrupt you in mid-thought there, but I was about to get into some trouble. So, let me just ask you to pick up where you left off. Why does there seem to be such a high proportion of gay men who enter seminaries?
Well, again, you're changing the focus to enter seminaries, and of course, Don Cousins, who was a rector of a seminary for many years, said that between 50 and 70% of the candidates coming in now might be homosexual in orientation. That is probably higher a proportion than it was in the past. But how many bishops and how many cardinals are homosexually oriented, and how many of them are sexually active? I've been on the faculty of major seminaries, Pontifical Seminary, for over 12 years. And I will tell you that I've lectured in seminaries and consulted in seminaries, and there is a goodly proportion of the priests who are homosexual, and some of them are homosexually active. Now, in terms of the church's doctrine and in terms of the church's documents, they've recorded in 1051, St. Peter Damian came out with a book called Gomorrah, it chided not only the priests and the pope, but the bishops who tolerated sexual activity of priests with each other and priests with boys. On the other hand, go ahead.
I'm just wondering if I could just jump in for a moment and ask, what do you think the effect of this edict will have on those men that you say are now serving in the church and in some of the higher levels of the church?
Well, it's going to raise more questions. It's a bit, the church is in the Galileo situation. They're fighting nature and they're fighting reality, and they're not looking at the facts. They're rather looking at this speculation and the future. You know, what's the church going to be if these men come in? These men are not in the church. What about the men who are in the church? Cardinal Jose Sanchez publicly said when he was faced with the figures that 50% of priests are sexually active at any one time, he said, I have no doubt of the accuracy of those figures. The point is that this has been precipitated or pushed along by this flood of information about priests who are active with children.
Today we're talking about the policies of the Catholic Church concerning gay priests. My guests are John Allen, correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter, and Richard Seip, co-author of the forthcoming book, Sex, Priests, and Secret Codes, the Catholic Church's 2,000-year paper trail of sexual abuses. We'd like you to join the conversation. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And Juan from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, you've joined us on Talk of the Nation. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I would like to ask a question of any of the gentlemen who are currently on regarding the church's attitudes towards sexual behavior or misbehavior, as the case may be. Will the church also next be looking at the irresponsible behavior in its view of priests or nuns who are taking part in consensual sex, heterosexual sex?
Good question. John Allen, let me direct that to you. Any indication that heterosexually active priests and members of the clergy will be subject to a similar edict?
Well, I mean, as Richard Seip and others have pointed out, I mean, Catholic priests are under an obligation of celibacy. So from a certain point of view, if they are sexually active, regardless of the kind of sexual activity we're talking about, it's a violation of their vows, and therefore they're subject to disciplinary action from their bishops and so forth. Now, I think, however, it is also widely recognized that that there are parts of the Catholic world where the ability to enforce the discipline of celibacy is to some extent limited, particularly in some regions of the developing world. And certainly, I think, that as the conversation about sex in the church heats up from a variety of different points of view, these issues are going to increasingly sort of be on the front burner. However, I would say that the one issue that to date has not driven the question of opposite sex contact between a priest and adult women, that has not driven that issue, is of course the question of lawsuits. I mean, that to some extent was the thing that caused the dam to burst on the question of the sexual abuse of children. Mm-hmm. Although people like Richard Seip, who have been following these issues for decades, certainly knew about it. The public conversation about that issue really was unleashed by the fact that lawsuits, particularly in Boston, had caused the release of an awful lot of documents that documented, a decades-long pattern of inattention and negligence.
Richard Seip,
to date, there is not a similar pattern of civil litigation around, opposite sex relations between adults, and so I don't know that it's going to come to the fore in the same way that this other question has.
Richard Seip, let me just toss that to you. Would you agree? Is that is the issue of lawsuits and liability resulting from the scandals with pedophilia in the past resulted in do you think in this new doctrine, and therefore we're not likely to see much attention being brought on consensual heterosexual relations?
Yes. the fact of the legal intervention of sexual abuse of minors by clergy is a tremendous symptom of what's going on sexually across the board, from cardinals on down. And partly, this is a symptom that's being treated as if it is the problem. It is a problem. But the problem in the church is sex and celibacy. The whole sexual agenda of the church, from contraception to masturbation, homosexuality is just one of the questions, sex before marriage, sex after divorce. These are the whole host of questions that are raised, and the question of homosexuality is a smokescreen and really scapegoating in order not to face these other questions that are active within the church and within the hierarchy.
One thing I'd like to ask is, how is the church going to go about actually screening or increasing the screening that goes on in seminaries to keep gay men from entering the seminaries? John Allen, has there been any, do you get any clue from what you've been able to discern how this is going to actually be implemented?
No, and I repeat, I think that is the great unanswered question about the document. I mean, what leads us to believe that its impact is going to be any more transforming than the impact of the previous two documents on the question? I mean, clearly, the fact that the document is going to come out in such a high-profile way and with the Pope's authorization will certainly be a strong signal to bishops and to seminary rectors and to religious superiors. There will certainly be some tightening up that goes on. But on the whole, it remains unclear exactly what kind of follow-up there will be. One other point I would make is that there were some American bishops who were actually opposed to bringing this document out, even though they're not opposed to the policy, but were opposed to the document on the grounds that it might actually make incoming candidates much less likely to be honest about their sexual past and their sexual orientation. And therefore, you might have a situation where it is actually more difficult, rather than less, to identify, who is having struggles with this issue and which men need particular attention.
Richard Seip, do you agree? Is this just going to sort of drive this kind of conduct, into the closet, if you will, further into the closet?
Well, for instance, Cardinal Bellavacqua said that he would have no homosexually oriented men in his seminary. Now, the logic of that would be the same as if the government said, look, we are sick of sex in prisons, so we're not going to have any gays in a heterosexual prison. The seminary atmosphere is, in a sense, a breeding ground for sexual feelings, and sexual orientation isn't the only problem. I mean, you take submarines, you take boats. For instance, in the Navy, there's a statement that distinguishes homosexual orientation and feelings, etc. If the ship is underway, it's not gay. And what happens on the ship stays on the ship. And that's all geared in this sense that if you're going to put all these men together, and they can be heterosexually oriented down to their fingernails, they can be put in certain circumstances where their affections, where their friendship, and when their need for comfort will go over into activity. This concept of weeding out those who are coming in, I think, is so false. They have to start with the homosexual bishops, the homosexual cardinals, the heterosexual bishops and cardinals, who is sexually active. Because the goal of this is not anti-homosexual. The goal of this is pro-celibacy. And we have to look at what impedes priests, whether they're homosexual or heterosexual, from being sexually irresponsible. That's the goal.
And that's a good place to leave this discussion. Richard Seip is co-author of Sex, Priests, and Secret Codes, the Catholic Church's 2,000-year paper trail of sexual abuse, forthcoming from Volt Press in a couple of weeks. He joins us from the studios of KPBS in San Diego. Thank you, Richard. And John Allen is Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter. He spoke with us on the phone from New Haven. Thank you, John.
Very welcome.
Well, the leaves are turning, the days are growing cooler, and the pennant races are tightening. Coming up on Talk of the Nation, a discussion of baseball in the fall. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.